Hello, welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader in Flagstaff, Deborah McFadder, with excerpts from Yes Media, a nonprofit independent publisher of solutions journalism. Through rigorous reporting on the positive ways communities are responding to social problems and insightful commentary that sparks constructive discourse, Yes Media inspires people to build a more just, sustainable, and compassionate world. We start today with an excerpt from a newly published book, Becoming a Good Relative. The author is Hilary Giovalli, and this was first published October 8th, 2024. The title of the article is What to Do with Your White Guilt. At the top of the article is a photograph of a woman. She has a ponytail. She's holding her hand to her chin like we do when we're thinking sometimes. We can't really see her face. Everything is very dark and silhouetted. Around the top of her head are clouds, but they could almost be thoughts that are what she's pondering. Author Hilary Giovalli knows that moving through guilt into accountability creates necessary change for yourself and others. Whiteness has been the subject of much writing, teaching, and scholarship. Public discourse on the topic became widespread during the racial justice uprisings after George Floyd's murder in the summer of 2020. But I find that we white people still tend to have amnesia about our own history of settler colonialism. Among ourselves, many consider it inappropriate, distasteful, or even rude to discuss such things. But in the words of Mark Charles and Soon-Chan Ra in their 2019 book, Unsettling Truths, white America could not perpetrate 500 years of dehumanizing injustice without traumatizing itself. On the night of December 31st, 2015, I learned about my ancestors' long-standing history on this land. The next day, January 1st, 2016, the process of unraveling our family's amnesia began. As I began sharing my ancestral discoveries with my white friends and family, I encountered blank stares and shrugging shoulders, accompanied by a quick change of subject to something more timely, relevant, or entertaining. I was often told reassuringly, "Well, that was a long time ago. Everyone thought differently then. You shouldn't feel guilty about that." Far from being placated, I wanted to scream. People literally could not hear what I was saying. I felt isolated in a process that was rewriting my core identity. What I had discovered in my own family history posed a threat to the person I thought I was, and to the person I was taught to be. Looking back now, it felt like I was receiving an ancestral push toward truth and healing after many generations of silence. The process went far beyond a tidy phrase like white guilt. Over time, I began distinguishing guilt from accountability. Staying stuck in guilt is not helpful. Moving into accountability catalyzes necessary change. I was rapidly becoming someone I did not recognize. What was now glaringly obvious and in my face all the time was being actively ignored by well-meaning white people all around me. Overwhelmingly, I felt pressured to calm down, behave, just stop talking about it. Why? Talking about the shadows of colonialism and enslavement contradicts the heroic American mythology that we learned as children. Within the Euro-American diaspora, our capacity to deal with our ancestral legacies is compromised. We are part of a culture that is more interested in maintaining a narrative of innocence and denial than in embracing truth and healing. I imagine this work to confront our collective amnesia will continue for the rest of my life. I hope it will persist into future generations as well. Over the years, I came to see our amnesia as a complex response to wounding that happened long ago. When our European ancestors carried to Turtle Island their diseases, poverty, disrupted communities and families, severed cultures, and violence, it did not expunge their own historical trauma. Establishing dominance over the unique civilizations that were already thriving on this continent did not make us whole again. Kidnapping African leaders, healers, holy people, elders, mothers, fathers, and children to build us a wealth-accumulating economy did not bring us peace. In her book, Inherited Silence, Euro-descended elder Louise Dunlap shares how she perceives the suffering of our settler ancestors. Here's the quote. "A nightmarish, button-your-lips suffering that warped the mind, closing it to compassion for other humans and encouraging brutality against perceived enemies and the earth itself. These ancestors struggled with a punishing legacy that still afflicts us. Our ancestors' punishing legacy went into the underbelly of our society. Today, it hides out behind a polite mask of denial. Almost everything in Eurocentric culture conspires to keep us asleep. Amnesia is the path of least resistance. I am grateful that the ancestors have shown me the unpopular truth. Unleashing their tears and reviving their memory might just be the messy, raw, healing balm for the wounds our people sustained and perpetrated so long ago. If we muster the courage to traverse these shadows, who might we become on the other side of all that pain? Who are we underneath the denial, amnesia, grief, guilt, and shame? Let's find out." This essay is excerpted with permission from Becoming a Good Relative, Calling White Settlers Toward Truth, Healing, and Repair by Hilary Giovalli, Green Writers Press, 2024. About the author, Hilary Giovalli is a mother, writer, and community organizer who lives in Flagstaff, Arizona. A ninth-generation American settler, she is descended from Celtic, Germanic, Nordic, and indigenous peoples of ancient Europe. Hilary seeks to follow the indigenous and Black leadership in support of human rights, environmental justice, and equitable futures. As an active reparationist, her work is guided by intuition, love, and relationships. She divests from whiteness and bridges divides with truth, healing, apology, and forgiveness. She is the author of Becoming a Good Relative, Calling White Settlers Toward Truth, Healing, and Repair. Learn more about her work at goodrelative.com. This excerpt was read by the author's mother. We move on next to a review of another new book. The review was written by Paige Curtis, first published October 2, 2024, and the title of it is A Prayer for the Modern Climate Era. Interestingly enough, the top of this article has an illustration also of a person in silhouette, a female, and instead of clouds at the top of her head, she has plants and butterflies that are flowing across the top of the picture. The background is in sort of greenish blue, and the silhouette is dark. On a recent family trip to Jamaica, I walked through the lush, humid forests of a Kingston suburb. The island was still reeling from the effects of Hurricane Beryl, the earliest Category 5 Atlantic hurricane in a century, and the pervasive effects of climate change were laid bare. Shattered storefronts dotted once pristine main streets, and farmers living in rural towns lost acres of cropland. Though a world away from my daily life as a climate communicator in Boston, I found myself returning to a pressing question. Is it too late to address climate change? It's a question that marine biologist and self-proclaimed policy nerd Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson, with her own family connections to Jamaica, is intimately familiar with. In her latest book, What If We Get It Right? Visions of Climate Futures, by One World Press, September 2024, Johnson offers an evocative exploration of possibility and transformation in the face of climate change. The collection of essays, interviews, poems, and art began as an attempt to spark conversation about climate solutions in popular culture, but it evolved into something much bigger. This book is my response to anyone still wondering whether all of our climate efforts are worth it, Johnson told me when we spoke on the phone in September as she was traveling for her book tour. Johnson, who co-edited the best-selling 2021 anthology, All We Can Save, Truth, Courage, and Solution for the Climate Crisis, builds on her previous work to deliver a timely and urgent guide for envisioning and implementing climate solutions. The book is not just about understanding the problem, though Johnson and climate scientist Kate Marvell make clear the atmosphere is fundamentally different now due to human activities. It's about contemplating and, in a way, manifesting the various paths we as a society can take towards a livable future. One of those paths must inevitably involve looking to nature for solutions. In a section of the book entitled Replenish and Regreen, Johnson and others imagine a world where food systems are regional and regenerative, biodiversity is valued, and human stewardship of other species is the norm. Brian Donahue, a professor, farmer, and New Englander like myself, proposes a novel plan to revitalize rural America by growing more food closer to home and repopulating small towns. As a Black woman with dreams of leaving urban life for a country homestead, I've often felt afraid of the conservative values that typically come with living in rural communities. But Donahue offers sage advice. Find your people, whoever that might be, or bring your people. Don't feel like you're supposed to go it alone. This requires community. Community is a through line of the book, and not just the human variety. Animals and insects, ecosystems, and various natural cycles are incredibly important for planetary health. But they remain enigmatic for most of us. Take, for example, the fact that even documenting the number of species on Earth is a never-ending effort. Yet Johnson writes that the climate solutions that nature offers can comprise more than one-third of the CO2 mitigation needed to hold global warming to below 2 degrees centigrade. A crucial part of unlocking this potential for change is having greater respect for and ceding decision-making power to the naturalists, conservation scientists, and indigenous communities already stewarding the natural world. You are tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. Just as the book homes in on specific solutions, it also zooms out, taking aim at the cultural values undergirding many of our modern systems. In an interview with author and activist Bill McKibben, Johnson draws connections between the capitalistic values of short-term growth and the funding of new fossil fuel development. The book lays bare the fact that money that companies and consumers have sitting in major banks produces more carbon than the average American does in a year. According to McKibben, a reimagined financial ecosystem might rely more on credit unions and locally owned banks that keep money in a given community. That should be happening as we start to rely more on renewable energy, because oil and gas are in Texas and Saudi Arabia and Russia, but happily, sun and wind are everywhere. Through the exploration of subjects from media and labor to transit and legal systems, Johnson and co-conspirators answer a deeper question about the climate crisis. What if we had systems that loved us and, by extension, the planet? In the section she calls Away from the Brink, Johnson sees these ideas to their rightful conclusion. Advertisements for fossil fuel and gas-powered cars would be an aberration. Climate change would be embedded in all local journalism, not viewed as a niche topic. We would evolve beyond the climate apocalypse box office flicks, and climate realities would become the backdrop of every genre of television and film. The influence of fossil fuels in politics would be reined in, and our democratic system would become more representative. Exploitative labor practices would be abolished, and a livable wage would be commonplace. Seeing this vision laid out with striking specificity, it feels to me like it's within our grasp. Johnson admits that on the role of electoral politics in climate action and the climate impacts of mega industries like fast fashion, the book is a bit light. These are two topics Johnson plans to cover in her new podcast, debuting on her Substack in the fall of 2024. This is such a useful question. What if we get it right? That this book can't fully answer, she tells me frankly. So I want to keep the conversation going. Whether you're an activist, a parent, or simply curious about climate, you are likely to find pieces in this collection that appeal to you. And that's intentional. The book does not argue for one-size-fits-all solutions. Too often, the climate movement and the media tell everyone to do the same things. Vote, protest, donate, spread the word, lower your carbon footprint, Johnson writes. But all too rarely are we asked to contribute our specific talents, our superpowers. For my part, I saw myself in the book's Afrofuturist agricultural artwork by Olalekan Jeifus and reflecting on Marge Piercy's poem, To Be of Use, inspired me to view my climate work with its many ups and downs as an exercise in perseverance. It encouraged me to recommit to incremental change and stay invested for the long haul. The variety of pieces in the book and the many forms they take serve as a reminder that everyone has a place in these climate futures and a hand in bringing them to life. Johnson's climate action Venn diagram aims to pinpoint the intersection of what brings you joy, what you're good at, and what work needs doing. That, she says, can be your place in the climate movement. For me, it's probably something involving climate comedy, but the book overflows with inspiration and starting points for anyone struggling to picture a replenished world. That's not to say that this world is without sacrifice, though. In a concluding entry, Johnson and ocean farmer Bren Smith are clear-eyed about the necessary work and change ahead. We're going to have to say goodbye to some things we hold close to our heart, Smith says, remarking on the many natural wonders we've already lost. Johnson adds, we need to live as though we understand this crisis is real, which means trying out a range of solutions and having a healthy relationship with failure. A book of this kind, with its cautiously optimistic view on climate, might read as wishful thinking. To me, it is a prayer for the modern era, where practicality meets possibility. About the author, Paige Curtis is a third culture kid writing at the intersection of environmentalism, blackness, and pop culture. She covers climate tech, black environmentalism, and uplifts the environmental ethics and embedded in Caribbean livelihoods. Paige worked at mission-driven organizations and is currently in a communications role at the Boston Ujima Project. She can be reached at paigecurtis.me, and that's spelled paigecurtis.me. Here's a little reminder that you can stream and get on-demand programs with our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. We'll move along now to a section of opinion that was written by the Yes editors and first published August 19th, 2024. What is Progress 2025? Elections aren't just about choosing representatives. They're also about declaring collective priorities. Project 2025 explicitly intends to reshape the federal government in order to decimate civil and human rights, crush environmental protections, and gut employment and consumer protections in favor of expanded corporate influence and privatization. This moment calls for an equally bold response that centers human and planetary needs and uplifts the solutions that make them possible. For nearly 30 years, YES has been reporting on these exact solutions. That's why we've launched Progress 2025, intended to be a hub for the big ideas and grassroots methods that offers a hopeful collective vision that counters toxic individualism and authoritarianism. Project 2025 is a 922-page document crafted by the Heritage Foundation, an ultra-conservative think tank that offers a future conservative presidential administration a transition plan to severely limit how federal government agencies serve the public. The authors of Project 2025's mandate for leadership mock progressive and intersectional ideas, claiming that unaccountable federal spending is the secret lifeblood of the Great Awakening, and specifically target federal funding for human needs. Progressives are sounding the alarm over Project 2025 and its proudly regressive agenda to decimate reproductive and LGBTQ rights, undermine racial justice, privatize government services, accelerate climate change, and more. Similarly, many have lamented the lack of a comprehensive progressive counter-agenda designed to improve conditions for and safeguard the rights of all people. But the truth is that communities across the country have already been laying the groundwork for a collective, compassionate future. Yes, media has decades of archival stories reporting on solutions that can make this progressive vision a reality. Beginning on August 20, YES will publish new original stories every week that expand the framework from what is possible under a Progress 2025 vision. Together, we will respond to the apt and timely question posed by YES contributor Adrienne Marie Brown: how do we build something that is able to sustain what's already happening now and able to help us thrive into the future? We have to make the world that we need to live in politically possible. Project 2025 targets both undocumented immigrants and legal methods of immigration. In the words of its authors, the next administration ought to be prioritizing border security and immigration enforcement, including detention and deportation. The project places enormous emphasis on immigration as the main source of domestic problems, playing up fears of crime and job theft by immigrants, and calling for mandatory detention of undocumented people. The broad vision of Project 2025 is that immigrants don't belong in the United States, and therefore the next administration would have a mandate to dramatically increase the budget of the Customs and Border Patrol agents, completely seal the border with Mexico, eliminate several categories of visas and legal statuses, and federally divest from sanctuary cities. In contrast, Progress 2025's vision of immigration upholds the tenet that no human being is illegal. It adopts the intersectional and multiracial organizing led by immigrants' rights groups that prioritizes the collective rights and dignity of immigrants. Progress 2025 envisions an end to detention and family separation, the decriminalization of asylum and immigration violations, an expansion of sanctuary cities, and comprehensive immigration reform that includes permanent status for dreamers and their families. The end goal is to imagine a world without borders. Project 2025 aims to cut the size and scope of federal agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, the National Weather Service, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, claiming they have infiltrated the federal government and are, quote, one of the main drivers of the climate change alarm industry, end quote. It calls for the U.S. to withdraw from the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change so that the U.S. wouldn't need to track, report, or reduce emissions. Project 2025 also calls for a rollback of environmental protections, including the repeal of the Climate Forward Inflation Reduction Act, as well as an expansion of fossil fuel drilling. An August 2024 study determined that if all of the document's climate-related recommendations were implemented, the U.S. would spew an additional 2.7 billion tons of climate-heating emissions into the atmosphere by 2030, comparable to what India emits in a year. Progress 2025, instead, highlights the communities taking back the power to stop burning fossil fuels today. Groups are holding polluters accountable, passing life-sustaining legislation, enshrining the legal rights of nature, and decolonizing their relationship with the land. Advocates emphasize the need to invest in alternative energies that protect the planet without sacrificing frontline communities in the process. As Progress 2025 makes plain, climate solutions need to be many and varied, tailored to individual communities and the people who call them home. Since we are nearing the end of our time, I will stop at this little break in this particular article. There are other comparisons between the Project 2025 and the Progress 2025 endeavors, and we can read about them on our next time together. You have been tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. In Flagstaff, I am your volunteer reader, Deborah McFadder. Thanks a lot for listening.